Now, from the Left Coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Not sure about you, I have a hard time finding heroes in our world today. Here's a conversation with one of mine, the Chinese artist and activist Ai Weiwei. I first caught his work in an exhibit on Alcatraz, the prison island in the middle of San Francisco Bay, about 3 years ago. A powerful exhibit that I describe in the opening part of this interview. Then we focus on Ai Weiwei's powerful new documentary film, clocking in at just under 2.5 hours. A survey of displaced refugees numbering 65 million around the globe today. It's not a Michael Moore documentary, although Ai Weiwei is seen in it. He allows us to experience the life of refugees displaced from many scenes caused by U.S. aggression and intervention. Ai Weiwei speaks English, but with a heavy accent, and I encourage you to listen carefully to our conversation. I also want to note that Ai Weiwei has recently launched a massive exhibit in New York City, more than 300 installations on the concept of fences and borders to showcase the narrow-minded efforts that are used to create some kind of hatred between people. I hope you'll find the documentary. It is in distribution now, opening here in the San Francisco Bay Area, including at the Rafael Theater near me in Marin County. And if you get a chance to view it, I think you'll come away touched like I was. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions. Mark Brodsky just returned after a hiatus. Stuart Russell, Brian Wilcutts, and Andrew Rush are all regular contributors to the PBC podcast. I hope you'll join them. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. You just click on Menu, click on Become a Subscriber, and it takes you to the sign-up page where you've got options. Thanks for listening, and please send me your comments about this conversation with Ai Weiwei. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com.
Well, it's my pleasure to visit with Ai Weiwei, who is in San Francisco, to talk about his new film, a powerful documentary called Human Flow. And I've had an opportunity to screen the film. It's really powerful. And I want to talk to you about it in a moment. But first, I want to share with you some pictures that I took of the exhibit at Alcatraz a couple of years ago that you were not permitted to travel to the United States to install or to see. And this is a picture of the large room where your Lego tapestry with your drawings of over 100 political prisoners was displayed. And I want you to know that it had a great impact on me. And I took pictures. This is from a guard station through some bulletproof glass. And I was focused on Shaker Amer. I was supporting a campaign at that time for his release because he had been at Guantanamo for over 12 years. Tell us a little bit about what drew you to use Legos, why you chose Alcatraz for this exhibit, and what kind of response you've gotten to it.
First, thank you for making this opportunity for me to talk. And the show in Alcatraz is really come from my relations from San Francisco. art gallery Cheryl's hands. She always wanted me to do something in San Francisco. I told her, unless you find an interesting opportunity or project. So once she knows me well, and she said that this is a possibility to do something in this X garment jail facility, I was very excited, because that time I was in self-detention. And after I was just come out from detention, and I really interested about facilities which limit people's freedom because certain kind of crime. But in different societies, the definition about crime are very different. In many, many locations, it could be just political prisoners or someone who had some opinion, or, you know, we call it prisoners of conscience. So I said yes. So we did research with Amnesty International, and so we asked for the political prisoners, which, you know, 176 from all different kind of nations. Quite a lot from China, and also from Arab, you know, like Iran or Egypt, or many nations, could be Russian or North Korea, and there are several from the United States. So every expression I try to find a new language, you know, the language which can extend the meaning of freedom or possibilities of communication. So let go is a choice, because how to connect those people lost their freedom, which is common value, you know, they defend all those very common values, you know, freedom of speech or exercise, citizens' rights to the truth or to question the power. And to use a very, very common vocabulary, which is Lego, you know, it's a everybody know what Lego is about. It's about children's practice, learning about to structure some kind of image or form. It's very, very basic means, you know, plastic cubes. So I think that works can be very well, but in the reality, it works even better, because many, many prisoners we found either has no photo or photo with very rough condition.
A mugshot.
Yeah. and Lego is best for that, because Lego is limited colors, you know, maybe 12 or 11 or even some, you know, some. It's just very limited, so you have to.
And you got into a dispute with the makers of Legos, who tried to cut off your use for art with a political expression.
Which yeah, that happens later. When I did the second show in Australia, I'm sorry, and to build a local freedom defenders image, which is about 24 of them. And we have to use a lot of Legos to build a Lego room. Then Lego company gave us a clear reply, said that we don't support a political oriented work, which made me a big, big surprise. I said, what do you mean by political oriented work? I mean, this is people who defend the very essential values why Lego can become Lego, you know? you know, this our society have built on those values. If you, of course, that's contradictory. You know, Lego do Star Wars, do all kind of political works, and you know. So it turned out I learned Lego would have some kind of big factory in Shanghai, or you know, biggest, you know, market is in China. So I put this kind of little notes on my Instagram. It's very little, and it generates such a media discussion. So many people involved, because all people get very frustrated about a big company making statement which stand on the side, not supporting freedom of speech, but rather with very strange reasons.
And I recall one reaction where people filled up a car with their own Legos to donate to you.
It's true. We have about maybe 20 cars parked in different locations, a container. So people can bring their Legos from the roof window to pull into those cars. So ended up we have tens of Legos from all over the world. And yeah, it's become a social movement from a very, very small incident. And of course, as a good result, Lego company changed their policy, apologized for what they have been doing.
And beyond the moving exhibit, and it really did touch me, we went to the next room where you had individualized postcards for each of these political prisoners. And I sent one to Shakir Amer, and I sent one to John Kiriakou. And I've gotten to know John since he was released from prison. And I would like to hear your side of the story about your surprise encounter with John Kiriakou in Berlin earlier this year.
Yeah, he was walking on the street, and then I met him. I was so surprised, and I'm happy he's very, you know, still in high spirit, a healthy man, finally being released. They told me a story, you know, one day or the 1 week, suddenly he received thousands of cards from you know, one location, and the people writing a lot of, you know, wishes or poetry or drawings, and which is come from the work yours truly. You know, we think only showing that is not enough. We have to build some kind of connection to the people at a certain time, and you know, in the prison. And of course, later we also met Charles Manning. She also said she got tens of cards, and and she was so happy. And once the prison guard just put a whole box of card put on the tables, boom, said, "That's yours." You know, nobody knows what's really happening. And many people in very different locations, they all got those cards.
And this was all your conception, right?
Oh yes, we designed this. We think at least we let people know they're not being forgotten.
But also to engage the people who visit your exhibit beyond just the images and their thoughts, to move them to action, to connect them with a political prisoner. This is very important and novel.
It is. I think in today's world, people often feel, yes, we know the situation, what we can do. Yes, you can do this little, just send that card to that person. If you have sympathy to that person, or if you feel the justice has not been served, and tell them, you know. So that is a very touching moment.
And I want to use that to transition to a discussion of the Human Flow film, because this is a documentary that's very powerful. You appear in it, but you're not Michael Moore. You're not dominating the scene. You are really enabling us to see what you have seen. And it is beautifully filmed. There are many long scenes. You don't do fast cuts. You let us linger 15 seconds on the face of a refugee really gives us time to examine them and to understand their own humanity. And so the techniques that you use, the drone shots, the iPhone shots, bring us really right to the ground level of the experience of these refugees. And you shot in over 20 locations around the world. This is a phenomenal undertaking.
Yeah, it's a film start with a natural one person's journey, which is me. I have no knowledge about what a refugee is really about. So I have a strong curiosity to jump into the topic, because it's a topic which is overwhelming. So by doing that, it seems very natural to use a language I'm familiar with, which is filming or recording or documenting, you know, or research. So since I'm very familiar with, you know, because I was doing this kind of human rights works in China, and you know, we often have to do very quick response to those kind of tragic situation. And I did 10-20 films before. It's all for internet. It's everything to put in the theater. But this, because the sense getting so big and so unthinkably big, so very granted, so we have to put a lot of more investment on, you know, to organize the team, to cover different locations. Still, we have to come out a language which to decide why we need to make another film. There's a lot of refugee films in the media already. And why another one? And if there's another one, what do we want that to be? Then, you know, after all those thinking, you know, we know what kind of film we don't want to be. And that's an easy way to come to a clear conclusion. Then the next one, to design a language which can cope with the situation. So the drone shots or iPhone shots, or I bring me to the most two end of the approaching the same topic. One can be very, you know, above all, a little bit indifferent and view of the God, to look at the human's movement. And another, as iPhone is like you play with a knife, you really cut the wound or to see the blood come out from the skin of the surface. So this works pretty good, you know, because you have to jump from one place to another, and you always to have this large, grand perspective. At the same time, you know, the aerial shots, and at the same time to have the touch, you know, the touch of the skin, the hair, and, you know, this is bring the audience in constant struggle visually, mentally.
And what was the total amount of raw footage, the running time of everything you collected that was edited down into just over 2 hours for the film Human Flow?
The footage is over 900 hours, because the interview is, only interview itself is 600 interviews, over 40 camps, over 23 locations, nations. You know, so it's constantly across border and to go to another location. And in many shooting sites, it's quite dangerous. You know, it's, you have close range with ISIS group, or, you know, all those violent potentials.
Mm-hmm. And there are many feelings that were evoked in me by the film. One is the way the common person is able to block out the plight of the refugees, even when they are just beyond a fence. I'm thinking of Calais, where people desperate to get to England have camped out, and the French have brutally uprooted them periodically. And life goes on in the towns and villages right outside. The bullet train passes through there every day with tourists, you know, transiting from London to Paris on the Eurostar. And our ability to tolerate 65 million displaced persons on the planet today and say, oh, well, that's life. That's how it is. Our ability to absorb that seems to have expanded in a very bad way.
I think you're right. I think maybe if we have to say one character about our modern existence, it's about our indifference to other people's suffer. You know, if we are, otherwise we still consider we are not a modern people, because in our day, everything's so surreal, you know. We only functions by not to recognize the other people's suffering. Otherwise, the whole society is not going to function.
But we also, you know, dystopian films are very popular right now. People will pay money and eat popcorn to watch people suffer on the screen, but they won't lift a finger to help a human being flee from a war or other threats to their lives.
I think the incapability to act is also another character of modern life, where we sense the powerful, you know, civilized society are developing in such a magical way. Same time, we feel individuals are in the dream or nightmare. Very often, you think you cannot make a move. You know, it's very much like that. You know, it's in the reality. We are so much restrained by our own emotions or judgment or contradictory of our moral aesthetic restraints.
Here in the United States, President Trump has decreed that the cap on refugees will be 25,000.
And you're 40-some-thousand, right?
No, the new cap is 25,000.
Really? I thought it's 48,000, but it's still.
Yeah, no. 25 is the proposed number. You know, your film is not polemic in the way that you blame the United States or the war in Syria explicitly for the displacement of these people. You leave it to the viewer to look for the cause of the dislocation of these families and people. But it really bothers me that Americans are not challenging the way the United States is equating refugees with terrorists and eliminating access for virtually all of them.
I think, let's see if that kind of narrow mind or short sight is going to work or not. You know, by sacrifice our fundamental belief on human rights or humanity, it's not just to limit the possibility of other people's development, you know, to save them, but rather to limit our mind, our knowledge, our understanding about our own existence. It really lowered our humanity and bring us less courage, more coward, selfish society. And that would really do a fundamental damage to what America is about. We all children of migrants or refugees, but not too long ago. And if we don't recognize our own dignity, our past, that give our past a dignified argument, and the result will not be pleasant, you know. Mm-hmm.
You live in Germany now, and it's a very different culture, much more homogeneous than the United States, yet they've accepted 1 million refugees, mostly from Syria and Iraq. And here the United States, which I believe is the cause of much of this dislocation, is, I call it Fortress America, and the drawbridge is up.
I think it's totally unacceptable condition or kind of current, you know, political situation. You're not only limit people to come, you even trying to push away people has been here for decades. And, you know, those modern day slavery very clearly, you know, heavily violate the human rights to have all those Mexicans, all those migrants here, and not to recognize their rights, but rather to push them away. And, you know, you have many things going on. You limit the people rights to travel, you know, you limit people to, you know, build this kind of expensive war, which will not do any good for anybody, you know, and also it's not going to stop the human flow, which is obviously a ridiculous effort, helping under Cossey. So I come to a question, what is wrong with our democratic society, you know, and what is wrong with our understanding about freedom or human dignity? So this is, of course, why we have to make the film, you know, why we have to say we trust human can make clear mind and can act. You know, because all those human tragedies are made by human and it can be stopped by human.
Ai Weiwei, my time is almost up. A couple of quick questions. Is the exhibit that was at Alcatraz still on display in Washington at the Hirshhorn Gallery?
The partially is on Hirshhorn, the Lego portraits of 170 six prisoners is in display in Washington. So our decision makers or politicians or people in Washington would have a chance to look at those works.
It is just a short walk from Capitol Hill.
Yeah, it's a pleasant walk. You know, you know, it's free of charge. So a lot of audience.
Yes. And what projects will you take on next? What are you working on?
Now all my focus is on promoting the film. From here, I'll go to New York. The 13th of October, the film will be launched. And here is the 20th of October. So I want to convince people to say, spend 2 hours, you know, and to see, make your own judgment. I think I think it's a good gift to our knowledge about our time.
And you created at Alcatraz an opportunity for people to take personal action. What do you see in this massive refugee crisis that individuals can do to take action to ameliorate it?
Our involvement with a participant which is established investment in social and political change. So they would have a lot of follow-ups besides the film come to theater to try and to build connections between the people work on the front line, you know, to rescue those people and to make them settle, you know, a lot of NGOs and a lot of volunteers group. So that is continuous. And also, you know, if there's a profit with the film, a lot of them award directly to benefit those people.
Mm-hmm. And we also have the ongoing legacy, the children who have endured displacement. And I think of the camps in Macedonia that you depict. They will live with this all their lives. And you were a displaced person in your own childhood. How do you suggest that they cope with it? Do they need ongoing therapy?
I think the casualty is basically the children. You know, among these 65 million refugees could be, you know, many millions are children. And you can see they have no education. And the average refugees will spend about 20, 25 years as a refugee, average. So that means their life are wasted. And so we have generations of young people who have no chance to be educated. You know, it's not a nice picture about our future.
Ai Weiwei, it's a real pleasure to meet you. I'm very touched by your work, and I hope that I can offer you some validation for the connection that you make with people. And your new film, Human Flow, is something I recommend to all of my listeners.
Thank you. I think to tell your friends to come to theater and to watch this film is very important. Thank you.
Ai Weiwei.
Thanks for listening to this in-depth interview with Ai Weiwei, and I hope you'll find the film Human Flow and recommend that your friends see it too. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.